How's it going and what have you been up to?
Well, daughter's got rehearsals for a play, so Snow White. So she's been doing a lot.
Oh, yeah.
She's been doing a lot on that. And she came in the other night. It's all her rehearsals this week leading up to the play this weekend.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, you know, I haven't really got many lines. We find out what new play we're doing after we finish this one at the weekend.
Yeah.
And she was all like a bit miffed. She says, oh, you know, I bet it's something like Beauty and the Beast and I'll get the part of Fork number 7. You know, you're being built up slowly sort of thing. What else? Oh, the cats. You know, obviously we've got our two cats, Tommy, and the other one is now he's progressed and he's got a new name, which is Get Down Dave, because he's always up on the fucking side. But I've seen you can put foil up, can't you? Do you say you were spraying them with a bit of water and that yeah, was getting well, them done?
You've got Get Down Dave, we've got Eddie No.
Yeah, they've... As in, Eddie, no!
Fucking, is simultaneously the best and the worst cat in the world. He's nearly 7 kilos, so he's a right fucking unit.
Oh, yeah, he is, because we've had ours weighed, and they're about 3 and 3.5, but they are still kittens.
Yeah, well, Alice is only 3.5 as an adult, and, you know, she gets so fucked off with Eddie, he just gets in your face all the time and just fucking prods and... pokes at you and annoys you. He does it with the neighbourhood cats as well. He's a fucking nuisance.
I thought you were going to say he does it with the neighbours. He does it with a neighbour, Jeff. He's always moving his bin around.
But occasionally he goes into his litter box and comes out of... he's not good at anything, including using the toilet, so he'll go in the litter box and he'll come out with a bit of shit on his leg.
Nice.
And go kind of dabbing it around the house like fucking Paco Rabanne, that you've then got to go around with a spray bottle of disinfectant and, you know, roll a kitchen towel. And this morning, apart from it being all over the kitchen and then all over the table and the sill in the living room, in a fit of fucking lunacy, charged upstairs, jumped in the bath. So it was like in the bath, all along the edge of the bath. It probably a mixture of shit and stuff he's dragged in from outside.
It sounds like a bit of a dirty protest. Is he not happy with his food?
Up into the sink, couple of laps of the sink. And then up onto the bathroom windowsill. And then as he's come down, of course, when he's jumped up onto the surfaces, you've got shitty footprints on the tops of the surfaces. But then as he's come down, you've got shitty footprints just over on the side of them where he's launched himself off.
Yeah, I've seen that. And where I painted the walls, I've noticed paw prints halfway down the wall.
How's he got a paw print on the top edge and the side edge at the same time?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, don't ask how I do what I do.
Well, I took the cats for their first vaccinations. It's a bit late because they're 7 months, but we've only just got round to it. They've not been out yet.
Yeah.
And then... you've seen the cats, haven't you? One of them's spotty, one of them's stripy, yeah. One of them's much smaller.
They've both
got different types of fur. So I was talking to the vet about this, and she said, "She says, oh, well, it's quite common for cats to have different dads." And I was like, what do you mean? She says, well, the cats, you know, they're from the same litter and they're brothers.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they can be numerous different dads in a litter. I never knew that.
You think they might have all had different jobs?
Well, you know, I was expecting Dave's dad to start coming round at 7 o'clock every other week and take him to McDonald's, you know, and then bring him back without his coat and without one of his socks or something. But every time they do something shitty, like you were saying about your cat,
yeah.
You know, every time they, because Dave, you know, hides pens and keys, and if the girls put a razor away in the bathroom, he'll take it from the top cupboard and bring that downstairs, and you know. But for every time they do something shitty, you have these really nice moments with them, don't you, sir? And you forgive them. What have you been up to? How's your last month been?
Not so bad. Pretty uneventful. Work's quiet at the minute. Showed you, didn't I? Done a few T-shirts for the drinking club. Yeah, got one. Got one in a padded envelope ready to send out to you on probably Thursday or Friday. I'll go.
Super.
Last episode, we talked about school, didn't we?
Yes.
So I suppose, really, it makes sense that this week we cover our work lives and careers and jobs and things like that.
Yeah.
What's your view? Are you a live-to-work or work-to-live kind of... I think I might have broke...
Oh, you've caught me on the hop there.
I've broke Ben.
The only way I've ever thought about it is food-wise. I'm more like, I'm not really into my food. So there's a phrase about food, isn't there? Do you eat to live or live to eat? And that's it. I think I'm an eat to live person.
I'm starting to think I should have phrased this work good, work bad.
Yeah. Well, I've been in a position the last few years where I've been off work a bit to work on the house, and I currently do like a 3-day week, so I can still work on the house for 2 days.
Yeah.
But everyone's different, aren't they? You know, and I think until something happens in your life to change your perspective, you know, you do get set in your ways. But I've very much sort of turned towards trying to, because I've got children and a young girl as well, you know, trying to sort of be present and be sort of more around now, rather than working very hard to sort of reap all the benefits later in life. Because a lot of people
when they're all grown up.
I'm definitely sort of trying to, it's that phrase work-life balance, trying to find, tweak it and just find it. Me and Karen are always trying to find just little different ways where we can, you know, get to.
Yeah.
But, I've up until just recently, you know, you look back, and apart from like a year I spent on the dole learning how to play pool when I was about 17.
I'm going to say piano then.
Oh, yeah.
Apart from that 2 years I spent playing the banjo.
Well, to be really good at pool, you have to have been out of work and on the dole for a large period of time to learn, to master your skills on it.
Did you have? Did you go and see the careers person at school? The career, what are they called?
Careers advisor,
Careers advisor.
Oh, yeah, because that's what inadvertently meant. I met you, and I went to horticultural college because I went into that careers advisor, and she says, "What do you enjoy doing?" And I couldn't think of anything.
Digging holes.
Because it's like, it's like on your record of achievement, everyone put hobbies, watching telly and going out with your mates.
Yeah.
So I decided to mix it up and say, oh, I'll go out in the garden sometimes. And she that was it. I was booked into horticultural college at Rodbaston.
You might as well have said, they said, what do you like doing? He said, can you find us something near the pub, Old Nell's? at Garstang.
So that was it. That was it. I did a BTEC first diploma in horticulture at a college down here, and then ended up going to Myersco after.
Yeah.
10 years. 10 years later, I've been in landscape gardening for 10 years, thinking all I said was I like going in the garden. Fucking hell.
Well, I think for the careers advisor for it to be any good to you, I think you have to be kind of ahead of your years anyway, because you're basically you're making plans for a person that doesn't even exist yet, aren't you?
Yeah,
I mean, you're not going to be the same person in 2 years' time, never mind five and then 10.
15 or 16, aren't you, when she asks you that question?
Yeah.
You haven't even got a clue how to put your socks on properly, let alone what you want to do as a career.
No. I don't remember the careers advisors, because I think we said last time, me and my mates, we mostly stopped going in the sort of last year and a half. So we bypassed all that. But the first I ever heard of anyone talking about jobs and stuff was, because I was always good at art, was my mum and my stepdad telling people, whenever we did anything socially or went camping or anything with other families, it'd be like, someone would comment because I'd be drawing, and say, oh, he's good at drawing, isn't he? And say, yeah, he's going to be a draftsman. It was news to me. I didn't know what the fuck a draftsman was. All I wanted to be, sort of 8, 9 year old, was Buck Rogers. which was never offered to me, you know. But
yeah, there's not many jobs as that in the job centre. What's there on the boards?
No, but I mean, just being told that you're going to be this thing when you leave school, when leaving school is another lifetime away, it just gradually, over a few years, it just, all it did was absolutely set in stone in my head that whatever it was, there was no fucking way on earth I was going to be a draftsman. It could have been an absolute gift of a job
that paid the earth,
but I'd stuck my feet in by then, and it was like, no, I'm not having it.
Well, the careers advisor, they should have said, look, let's have a look at your grades. These are the ones that make you money. You know, are you going to work in an office or outside? But I just got packed off to horticultural college instead.
Yeah. But well, I kind of rattled around in Barra after leaving school, worked in Halfords for a bit. That was good. Retail, which is retail's the sort of last sanctuary for someone with no exam results, but just enough charisma to be put in front of the general public.
Yeah.
you know, where you just, what they used to call facing up, which is going round all the things in the shop, in the retail, just pulling everything forwards on the pegs so it looks tidy. And then you, it's like the paint in the fourth bridge or whatever, you just go right down the end of the shop and then you go back to the start. In case someone's come in and moved an Allen key to the back, you have to find it and move it forward so everything's nice and flat.
Imagine having to do that in Primark, where people just go in there just to throw stuff about. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like we were talking about B&M, weren't we? I think that's what they have someone doing in B&M with the Brothers Cider.
Oh, yeah.
But I
constantly moving it forward.
But I think they're inside the shelves doing it from inside, pushing them forwards. So you never see them. You take one out and the one behind just slides to the front.
It's a constant wall of 300 Brothers Ciders, Cherry Bakewell flavour, yeah, and Toffee Apple.
And you think you take your cider out and the cider comes forward. You think, you know, everything's cheap in it. How can they afford to have electric shelves? And it's not. It's some sun-starved little guy in there.
It's to make sure you can't put it back. There's no room to put it back on the shelf.
Yeah.
And then you're holding it thinking, this looks sickly, but it is only 98p, so I might as well fucking get it.
Yeah.
So it goes in the basket.
That's what they rely on, isn't it?
Oh, so you at Halfords, and then where were you after that?
Halfords. I had a shitty manager at Halfords, so I dropped a hammer on his head once. That was good.
Oh, right.
Not from high, just from about a foot, but it shut him up.
So you caved your manager's head in with a hammer.
Well, no, I was working on the bikes at Halfords. And you have a bike stand, which is like a big sort of steel tripod with a hook at the top, and you hang your bike on it.
Yeah.
And halfway down, there's like a metal shelf that all your nuts and bolts and tools go on. And he was fucking digging me out about something. And he knelt down to pick something up. And I just elbowed this hammer off the tool shelf onto his nut. Clonk! Yeah, he was called. I'll beep that out. He's probably dead now. It probably caught up with him.
Yeah, this next podcast I'll be doing on my own and go, Mike was arrested for assault due to his confession in the last podcast.
Yeah, there was a service up in Barrow called the Youth Inquiry Service. I don't think you'd have it anymore because even the, you know, the really important public services are starved for cash now, never mind the ones that, you know, could be seen as frivolous. But it was just there, this centre, sort of like, just to help young people get on, you know, they had computers and stuff you could go and use, and they'd help you with job interviews, but it wasn't the job centre, you know. They were
It wasn't Job Club.
No, it wasn't Job Club or out like that. They were genuinely interested in helping you. And after a few years of floating around Barrow thinking, I've got to fucking get out of here.
Was this after you'd been to college then?
This was before.
Oh, right, okay.
This was how I went to college. I went in and I said, I want to do something to get out of Barrow. I want to do something. And they said, what do you like doing? I said, well, I don't mind doing, you know, a bit of physical stuff. I said, I'm pretty good at art and I quite like the outdoors. And he went, right, hang on a minute. And he came back with a couple of leaflets for Myerscough College and said, this is this place, it's horticultural, you can do like tree surgery or landscape gardening, or, you know, they do sports courses and stuff as well. And I just said, yeah, that sounds all right.
And I remember the brochure looking classy. It was a glossy, fun-packed brochure, wasn't it? Very colourful. And it really did, like, marketing. It really made you want to go there. It did for me.
But he filled out the forms with me and said, right, you told me what date you're going to start. He said, come back in then. Or come back in the weekend before. I went in the weekend before. He told me what I'd needed. He said, I've set up all your grants and all your benefits that you'll need, so you don't have to do anything. Yeah,
you were down at the lodge, weren't you?
Yeah, and you'll get them. They'll all be paid to the college, so you just turn up and, you know, none of the finance you need to worry about. And then when it came to start, he drove me down.
Yeah.
He did absolutely fucking everything.
That's brilliant.
You know, he could well have popped his clogs by now, but if he's out there, you know, he's top bloke. Can't remember what he was called, but yeah, he came down, dropped me off my rucksack. And
he understood that you wanted to get out of Barrow, didn't he? That's,
yeah.
You know, he understood that.
Yeah, he did have quite a wizened look, like someone who perhaps had never managed it himself and thought, I'm going to live vicariously through other people and help them escape.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So you did a year at Myerscough, didn't you? And then what did you do? Didn't you hurt your leg or your arm or something? Which meant
I broke my arm.
That was
Me and Dan Critchley at the amphitheatre festival up in Barrow-in-Furness, the like summer open day with music and stuff, and bouncy castle. We were fighting on a bouncy castle, and we charged one of the walls so hard that the side of the bouncy castle ripped and the wall gave way. And we came flying out of the side into a ball, and I went down on my wrist and smashed my hand up.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was the end of my school college. You did a work placement and then went back for another year, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, just yeah. Bringing that, I did a work placement at a landscape firm in Wilmslow. That was good. I like Wilmslow, South Manchester. But yeah, for a year, I lived with an old couple in Wilmslow that the college had sorted out. I can't even remember their names now. I can't remember the old guy's name, but she was she did my dinners and so on every day, and she was rocking on nearly, she was probably 80 at the time.
Yeah,
and I mentioned she's, because she was trying to mix it up, I mentioned that I like curry, and the next day she'd stirred curry powder into the gravy onto the gravy dinner that she'd made. And I was like, oh, that's really nice of you. And
that works. I do that.
And then I looked across, and she said, I bought a bottle of like blackcurrant cordial and left it on the side. And there was probably about half the bottle missing. And she said, she saw me looking at it. She says, oh, I tried some of your pop, you know. And she says, oh, it was ever so strong. It made my eyes water. I was like... You do know you have to dilute that with water, don't you, Winnie? You've not. And she, I drank it all neat. I didn't know that. It's just, oh, it sent me ever so funny. She's been drinking.
Eyeballs shaking.
Neat, but neat 1990s cordial with all the stuff in, you know.
Happy shopper's finest.
But yeah, I did a year there, and then I went back to college in the third year. And stayed on campus again, but obviously without you and Mike there. But you know, it was just a different vibe there completely.
I bet you got a lot more done that third year.
not really.
You just find new people to misbehave with, don't you?
Yeah, I still used to drink up old Niles every Monday, merry down with Joe. Remember Joe Langrish?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And just got just as hammered because I was home brewing down at so I had a room in the quad. So, you know, Uncle Peter and Rab knocking around and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It was just like you felt a bit more mature because I went when I was in the third year, I was 21 rather than 18 in the first year. Like, and you felt like, oh, I've been out and done it in the world already because you'd done a year out working.
Yeah.
But
man and boy.
Yeah, obviously you didn't know shit, but
so you finished my escort, and I'd imagine you walked straight out of there and into a high-paid, very swanky landscaping job.
No, I did
all office-based.
I did all sorts after that. I went shop fitting for a bit for MFI, and then I did actually a stint in Frankie's and Benny's as a starter chef. Did I ever tell you that? The chefs were always really like stereotypically angry, like and stressed. And I was in, he said, right, we got to prep stuff. So we got to chop up all the pizza toppings. And he said, you got to chop up all the chilies. And obviously, whatever you do, don't touch your eyes. And I was like, oh, okay. So I spent an hour chopping up all these chilies for the pizzas and the pasta dishes and stuff. And I sort of stopped and thought, oh, don't touch my eyes. And I felt internally like I was congratulating myself. And then went into a long daydream. And then when I came out of my daydream, I got one of my hands down my pants. And I thought, fuck. So I ran to the toilet and washed my hands, sort of, you know, that sort of after the horse has bolted type thing. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that would make a funny story if that started to burn. And there was nothing for about 5 minutes. And we had this delivery that was coming in and was bringing like frozen food in. But that's when it started, and it was intense. And I, between this delivery for half an hour, I had to keep running back and forth to the toilet and stretching my infeasibles under the tap to cool down. What fucking the pain.
And was that when they got rid of you?
No, they kept me on.
When they caught you stretching your sweetbreads under the cold tap.
No, I wasn't caught in the act. And I didn't want to tell them because I'd only been there a couple of days. Yeah, Frankie's and Benny's for 3 days because it was 3 weeks I was there. It was an open kitchen. But that was fun. I enjoyed that. I was in front charge of starters, garlic breads and stuff. And I had a paddle to put my trays in the oven. And the waitresses were coming in and out of this swinging door next to me with this paddle. You know, It was, yeah, it was fun there.
Well, and I did a bit of chef training.
Yeah, because obviously
later on
into baking and stuff, haven't you?
But I'd done my graphic design course by then.
Oh, right.
In Manchester,
yeah?
Yeah, which was after we went to college.
Yeah, yeah.
Because after we were at college, I got a little flat with Donna, who I was seeing at the time. And we lived together only for a few months, didn't work out, in Blackpool. And she moved out and went back to her dad's. And I was in this little flat trying to think what I was going to do next, because I knew I couldn't go back to anything like MyerScore because I'd bust my hand up, like I was saying earlier. And I thought, well, it's going to be something to do with art again then. So I looked and there was a graphic design course starting in Blackpool, which I signed up for. But then on a weekend back in Barrow in Furness before the college course started, I met someone and started seeing them, and they were fucking hell, this is a long boring story. And I remember I was wearing my green jumper at the time.
I do it all the time. Sometimes I have to stop myself because it's like I'm caught in a lift with myself, you know what? Yeah. I mean,
and I'm just thinking, reach forward and tap the screen if I start to nod off while I'm actually talking.
I hope someone fucking comes and rescues me soon.
Yeah. But anyway, she was starting her first teaching job in Manchester, so I transferred from Blackpool to Manchester and went and lived there for about 25 years, working in graphic design.
Oh, right. Yeah. Was it that long you did that for then?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Worked for most of it, you know, odd bits of, you know, bad health and stuff, but worked pretty consistently.
Yeah, I think I remember coming. Is it Fallowfield in Manchester? Do you live there for a little bit?
Yeah, lived in Fallowfield, lived in Withington, lived in Sale, Didsbury, lived all over the shop.
Yeah, Didsbury. I remember coming and seeing Fallowfield as well. See, after my stint at Frankie's and Benny's, I went out. I worked for another landscape firm for a little bit, and then I went out to Australia for a year and worked with the guy that I'm working with now. Like he was foreman of a stonemasonry firm.
All right, cool.
Yeah, Jace. But then when I came back...
Oh, that's right. You mentioned Jace before.
Yeah. When I came back, I can't remember. I couldn't get any work. So I ended up working for a removal firm in Bamber Bridge for about a year. And they did removals for the military. So we used to go all the way around the country dropping up squaddy stuff and picking their stuff up. And we used to stay on campuses quite a lot, and whoever we were moving used to take us to their bar and their naffy shops and stuff like that. But when we go to Germany and pick up, say, a squaddy stuff, he'd say to us, like, he'd have a motorbike and he'd say, if I send this back or drive this back, it's going to cost a fortune. Can I give you a bit of money, you three fucking scallies, and can you hide it in the load in the articulated wagon?
Yeah.
So we'd get the motorbike up in the middle and then bundle all his furniture around it. And then, you know, hopefully, and most of the time, the wagon would go back to the country and then go back to the yard in Preston and then go to his new digs wherever we were stationed around the country. But every so often, that for some reason, they used to take off, they used to change the wagons and they'd take all this section of stuff off and put it on a different trailer. And they'd come across this fucking Kawasaki 1300 in the middle of the wagon. And because it had a petrol tank and it was illegal to bring it back, you know, we'd get all called in the office. How much money did you get given for taking this back, you fuckers? You know, and all this sort of stuff.
Have you ever watched Storage Hunters?
No, no.
A programme called Storage Hunters, where you can basically meet on a dockside or on an industrial unit, and there's a guy who takes you round. And it's like an auction. You bid on bins, the opening.
Oh, yeah. They
cut the padlock open. They pull the shutters up. And you're allowed to look in from the outside, but you can't go in and, you know, have a good mooch. And you bid on it. And, you know, quite often the shipping containers, and they'll open them up, and it'll just be full of bog rolls. And you'll think, oh, who the fuck wants a shipping container full of bog rolls? And there'll be someone at the back rubbing his face, you know. And then they start bidding. And they bid up to like $7,000 or something for the shipping container full of bog rolls. Then afterwards he goes, right, you've won it. And he'll step forward and he'll start throwing packets of bog roll back over his head. And in the middle there'll be a fucking yacht or something.
Yeah, a safe.
And that's what they were doing.
That's what it was like with this when we get to Germany.
Where were you working where you had the guy that asked if you wanted to go around for a drink?
Oh, well, that's So after the removals, in this was like early 2001, 2002, I got a job with a landscape firm in Chorley. They were called Homescapes, and it was run by an old guy called Tom Atherton and his younger wife. And he was obsessive about growing and showing sweet peas, right? And I made a terrible error of because he used to do talks on it with slides. And I don't know where, perhaps at his horticultural club or whatever. And one day he said, oh, would you like to come back? Because we worked at his house. He had it set up as offices and stuff. And we used to do the garden designs, and then he had teams of blokes to do it. He said, do you want to come back tonight? And I'll go, you know, you can sit, because he wanted me to grow sweet peas in his garden. He said, I'll go through my talk, you know. And I, for some reason, I said, yes.
Unmissable.
So I went back, and his wife kept me she kept me hydrated with room temperature Fosters, you know, cans of Fosters. But when he started doing this talk, someone had borrowed his slides and they're all mixed up. So it took fucking hours longer than it should have. And it was that evening where, when his wife came in, brought me like my third can of warm Fosters, that she noticed a mouse dead on the carpet by the fireplace. And I remember thinking, he has gone to a better place than I am currently in, because it was the most boring thing I'd ever sat through in my life. Time sort of stood still.
You're just waiting for a completely unrelated slide to pop up.
Yeah. Oh, if only. But just in the wrong order.
It wasn't the swinging hell that you thought you might have walked into.
The red sweet peas, but before the white, and it shouldn't have been. And it just went on forever. But yeah,
carnage.
Tom, Mr. Tom.
Well, when I used to work in Manchester, most of my freelancing in design has been with agencies. You know, you sign up with agencies, they find you the work, you off you go, and they get a cut of what you make. And I was with a couple in Manchester, and it was sort of between 2000 and 2010, it was really kind of hectic and fast-paced. You were out, you know, most days of the week, sometimes for, you know, weeks or a couple of months at a time, out on jobs. I don't drive, so it was buses and trams all over Manchester, really kind of fast-paced. And anything they asked, you got to the point where you'd sort of done it all on the wing for so long that anything they asked if you could do, you just said yeah, and yeah, off you went. And if you didn't know it when you arrived, you'd know it within an hour, because you'd just kind of pick it up. And it was the late, when was it? It was the early 2000s, I think. And it was, you know, the internet was still, it was around, but it wasn't anything what it is now. And I'd been asked if I could go out on this job by this guy from the agency called, this guy used to be my sort of agent handler, and he'd said, there's a bit of web stuff, you know, can you do web stuff? I said, yeah, no fucking idea what web stuff even was. I just imagined it would be something like what I did know how to do.
Yeah.
I don't really know what I was thinking. So I went out to this job. It was a clothing place in Trafford Park. And I walked in. Normally, they'll say, right, yeah, you can go and set up over there. So you go and get set up, and it's usually an hour before anyone even realises that you're there, and then they'll come and have a natter with you, and it's kind of casual. So if you need to learn something, you can get on the internet and you can kind of learn how to do it while you're there.
Yeah.
But this guy met me at the door and walked me to a desk and sat me down and immediately pulled the chair up next to me and said, we'll get cracking, shall we? You know, we'll get started. And I said, yeah, can I just have, you know, 10 minutes to get sorted? And he said, no, we've got a lot on today. So he started telling me what, you know, where these files were on the computer system, on the network. With Max, you can double click a file and it'll find the piece of software to open it. So I accidentally managed to open the right piece of software.
Yeah.
And then he started telling me what actually needed doing with these web pages in a bit of software that used to be called Dreamweaver. So I'm sat there, and I must have said to him half a dozen times, I said, can I just have 10 minutes to get settled and get a coffee? And he wouldn't go. He wouldn't leave me to kind of get me bearings and work out what I was doing. And I didn't have a fucking clue. I was completely out of my depth. So we ended up, you know, half a dozen times I must have said to him, yep, just give me 10 minutes and then we'll get straight onto it. No, wouldn't fucking get out of his chair. So we just ended up sitting there in silence while I slowly dragged things around on screen. And in the, after about 10 minutes of neither saying anything, he kind of gave me this sheepish look and got out of his chair and slowly made his way over to his office. And I turned round, he's in his office, and he's got his phone in his hand and he's reaching over and closes the blinds. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, God, what have I done here? And then my mobile phone goes and it's Terry from the agency. And he's like, Terry, he's like, Mike, I believe you're out on this job. You know, you said you were all right with web stuff. You know, are you not? Do you not think you know what you're doing? I said, well, I might have let on that I knew a bit more than I do, but I'm sure I'll be all right once when I get going. And then I look around again at the office and Matey Boy's parting the blinds with his fingers and he's got his face up to watching us on the phone together. And Terry says down the phone to me, I've got to ask Mike, have you taken anything? It's 9 o'clock in the morning on a Monday or a Tuesday. This guy considered my behaviour so weird that he thought I was on fucking drugs, has gone to his office, phoned my agent, who's rang me while I'm sat 30 feet away from him. Anyway, they said they're not going to be needing you for the day, so, you know, you can get going now.
I've got to ask you, have you taken anything? 9 o'clock in the morning.
Have you taken anything? I thought, first of all, I thought, what do they mean, like a stapler or something?
A rubber.
Oh, that was the most embarrassing thing I ever had happen at work. That.
Awkward, that's awkward, that is, isn't it?
So when did you get into stonemasonry then?
Well, when I moved back down to Tamworth after Homescapes and Mr. Tom, and I got another job with a mate of mine, just for a year, and with a landscape garden centre, actually. But we used to drive around the country putting up hanging baskets. That was a bit of a riot, that was. But and then before I really got into stonemasonry, I worked for a firm erecting precast concrete, which is like...
I remember that as well. Yeah. It was doing council jobs and stuff, wasn't it?
Well, doing like warehouses and distribution centres, that, you know, all the delivery bays and stuff, that comes all as precast pieces that you lift in position with a crane. So we used to use mobile cranes and sometimes tower cranes and things like that. But
cool.
I remember we were on a big job once and there was a tower crane and we had to wait for our turn to use it. And we had walkie-talkies. And this was, precast concrete it was. And the foreman got on the walkie-talkie and said, hello, crane drivers, can our turn now to lift our pieces? And the crane driver says, who are you? And he says, it's Mark Lolly and the precasters.
And one of your albums.
The crane driver said, who are you, a fucking soul group? And then I started working with Jason again, and then I moved into working for different stonemasonry firms on churches and castles and historic buildings. And it's all been pretty much sort of stonemasonry since then, really.
Going on to your, what you were just telling me then about when you were on sites and stuff, my mate's dad used to work on sites, and when they got somewhere new, because they were contractors, they'd send one of the young lads over to, if there was a cafe across the road, you know, they'd send this young lad to go and scope it out and go and see what it looked like for lunch and, you know, and come back and report.
Yeah.
So they sent this young lad and he came back and they said, well, how does it look, that cafe? He said, it looks fucking brilliant. They've got a sign on the window. Says they do beef bourguignon for 99p. And I'm thinking, fucking hell, it's a bit posh, but 99p, that sounds all right, doesn't it? You sure? He said, yeah, definitely, beef bourguignon, 99p. So they crack on with the morning, lunchtime, whistle, old gang of them together, down the road, get to this cafe, and read the sign on the window, which actually says, beef burger and onion, 99p.
Still a bargain, though, isn't it?
Sandford Orchard Cider.
Stamford Orchard. Yeah, I've got all mine lined up in front of me here, so I could remember them all.
The tagline on the bottle is "Cider done right," isn't it? And it's hard to argue with them.
Oh well, you sent me the blurb, didn't you, of the guy that started making it?
Oh yeah, fantastic. It was a hobby, wasn't it? They say a hobby that's got out of hand.
Yeah, he was making it in his shed, wasn't he? To start off with,
but like you with 40 litres of Garage Bastard.
But his whole premise, because it was really detailed, wasn't it? And he's gone through a long system of setting up this brewery, and now he's involved in...
Yeah, it's down in Devon, isn't it?
And now he's involved in the sort of upkeep of traditional medieval orchards, isn't he, around the country? And
yeah, some of the best orchards in the world they use for their apples.
No way. But the whole premise was that it was all about using fresh apple juice, wasn't it? Because most ciders are made
from concentrate,
which, you know, makes normal business sense because it, you know, it keeps longer and so on.
Yeah, you can store it, but when you drink it cheaper.
Yeah, but when you drink this Sanford Orchard cider, I don't know if I'd got it in my head because I'd read previously, and it does mention it on the bottle, but that's what you get. You get that fresh taste, don't you? You know, that's the real difference. Like, I do love cider. I used to drink a lot of it when I was a kid. But what set this apart from anything else was that freshness to it. Like, you get, like, you read a lot. It's used a lot on bottles and cans of stuff, isn't it? Crisp. This is a crisp tasting
thing. Yeah.
But this was fresh, wasn't it? This was
But the hazy one, what was the blue one called?
Oh, the Devon Mist.
That, I mean, you can tell, not only does it taste of apples, but you can tell the kind of apples. That Devon Mist tasted like, I'm trying to work out how to describe it without saying the brand. There's a big supermarket brand of apple juice, probably the biggest one, and it's in like a square bottle.
Oh yeah.
And it's like cloudy apple juice.
Yeah.
And they've got it in all of them, a squarish bottle with like a, you know, round lid on it. And you could tell that that's the apples that cider was made out of.
Oh no. Oh, okay. It's a real, that Devon Mist is a real sort of summertime beauty, isn't it? That one.
Oh yeah.
That was really nice. Now the Devon Red, the cap had come off slightly in the box, so it had lost its fizz. So I can't really give a proper critique of that one because.
Oh God, I loved that. I went out and bought. Morrison's have got an offer on at the minute.
Oh, have they? With this.
Four bottles of it for £7.
Oh right, brilliant.
Which is less than £2 a bottle. So I went and got a load more of it last weekend. That's how much I liked it.
Because the Devon Mist and the Devon Red, I think they're about 4.5%, but the Rib Tickler.
Yeah, they're what they call the session ciders.
Yeah, the Rib Tickler was a bit more at 5%. The Rib Tickler was really nice as well.
Yeah.
I know we're supposed to be, you know, reviewing ciders, and we should stay away from saying that was nice, wasn't it?
Lovely.
I watched a
program years ago. It was like one of these things with possibly Greg Wallace, where he walks around the factory telling you how fucking digested biscuits are made for an hour or something like that.
They look like Partridge Ideas, don't they? You know, when he just drinks custard.
And it was different grades of ice cream. It was from your Häagen-Dazs and your Ben and Jerry's and things like that, right down to your 50p in the cardboard box value range stuff.
Yeah.
And they said the test is what you do with to... if you're interested in what grade your ice cream is, if it's any good, you can let it melt, let it come back up to room temperature. And if it basically turns back into a custard or a thick cream, you know, you can see that that's what it was made from to start with. And if you wanted to, you could then go and freeze it again and it turn back into ice cream. It's a basic process that it's been through from its origin. And the very cheap, the very 50, you know, the 50p stuff, it turned into this. It looked like cottage cheese. You know,
nice. It was,
the only thing that was holding it together was the fact that it was frozen and full of sugar. You know, there's nothing from it, nothing of the cream or the custard about it. It is just, and I was thinking about this cider, you know, like there's the probably the biggest supermarket cider that we've all drank before. We'll all drink again. If you've ever let a tin of that get warm in the sun or unattended at a party and then picked it up and drank it when it's warm and flat, it's absolutely disgusting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whereas this, any of this Sanford stuff, it would basically, you could put it back in the fridge and in half an hour it would be absolutely delicious again, because it's very much of where it's come from, isn't it? It's just apple-y.
That Devon, the Devon Red had lost its fizz, but it's still really nice. It just made it taste like a scrumpy, basically.
Well, you can hold it in your mouth as well, can't you? You know, that like you almost chug it, don't you? You don't want it to linger on your taste buds for too long, because it's very dry and it's very acidic, and it doesn't taste anything of apples, does it?
No.
Really. Whereas this Sanford stuff, you feel like it can still remember when it was hanging on the tree.
Yeah.
It's a very green business. And I found this incredible. The furthest orchard's only 20 mile away. This was the bit I liked. All the byproducts of pressing and fermentation, so that must be all the solids of it, they get sent away locally to be bioconverted into natural green gas and recapture CO2, and then that goes back to them, and they use that for the gas that goes into fizz the cider up.
That's clever, isn't it?
That's fucking... I mean, you talk about people being green, and they go, yes, all of our bottles are recyclable. And you think, yeah, that's the absolute minimum when people are doing this.
It's given sort of Devon a cider identity as well, hasn't it? Like, if you think there's ciders from Cornwall, do you remember that Rattler that was going about... That's very much a Cornish cider, and then you've got your Somerset ciders. I think Gamers was Somerset, and then Herefordshire's Bulmers. But like this Devon one, you know, this Sanford's, it was a bit of a new one on me because I'd never heard of them before, and it's
right. I hadn't either.
It's like that thing, once you've got one, and then you say, oh, it's in Morrison's. Oh, I noticed it in Morrison's, and there it is, you know.
They've got two. My Morrison's only had one of them. They only had the Devon Red, but the Devon Mist on the main Morrison's website, there's the Mist as well. So they are keeping two of them. And I think the Devon Red, I think you can get in Aldi, but at the time we're recording this, I don't think they've got an offer on it.
But it's a fantastic cider.
It's just kind of refreshing all the way through. They've won. I had a page on this when we were talking about Barney, the guy who started it in his shed. They've just won everything. They won the champion cider of Great Britain. They've been in the top 10 ciders in the Independent. You know, everything they go in for, they're coming away with some sort of gong or trophy. So they're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and YouTube, sandfordorchards.co.uk. If you go on the website, scroll down at the bottom, if you sign up for the newsletter, they'll give you 10% off an order. And at the time we recorded this, they've got an offer on in Morrison's, so get yourself down and get hold of some.
Yeah, and they're green as well, so drink cider and save the planet, isn't it?
Also, as a secondary thing, this month we got sent a couple of beers from...
Atom.
Hull, from Atom Beer up in Hull. It's happy hour again.
Oh,
my House Martins joke there?
Yeah.
It was either that, or do you think I went with the right one? I should have gone with Caravan of Love.
Tough one to get in on a drink section, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Born out of a love of science, inspired by a life of travel and a shared passion for beer and the brewing process. And I think we can agree they are kind of space agey, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, the cans are a real sort of, scientific design, aren't they? NASA-style designs, lunar landscapes and deserts and so on. Yeah.
Well, they sent a couple. They sent, they also sent us a very nice lager and an IPA, but we've probably got less to say about that. So we'll talk about the one called Pink Noise, which was a hibiscus wheat beer.
Oh, yeah, that was really, really interesting, wasn't it? That was the one that was really interested to...
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. I had no idea what to expect from hibiscus. I knew it was a plant or a flower, so I thought, is it going to be a bit sort of grassy or something?
Soapy, but it wasn't.
It was just like a fruit beer, wasn't it? But you couldn't work out what the fruit was. Yeah, I had to go and look on the website. They said cranberry, apparently.
It was really subtle, wasn't it? But obviously, it was a Bowden-style wheat beer, and then the hibiscus added sort of the pink sort of colouring to it.
Oh, the colour was stunning.
Yeah. I really liked it. That was the one I looked forward to the most. And you're right, the Heller's Lager, That was a real sort of crisp, nice lager. That was.
Yeah, they were all great.
Not massive on lager, but I really like that. And the IPA, you know, I'm not massively keen on IPAs, but I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely recommend the hibiscus, the pink noise. It's called.
Well, that's the thing. I wonder if hibiscus, if that is the flavour of it, or if hibiscus was the colouring. I wonder if the flavour of hibiscus is actually that fruit that you could taste in it.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah.
And so the other one, the other beer that they sent was the Martian Dynamo Red IPA, wasn't it? Now, I'll let you describe that one.
I said you get an initial big smack of IPA hops, and then a dark old ale pops in the middle to say hello. And then the hops come back in greater numbers, like the fucking sand people, and chase off the old ale with broken pool cues.
That's it. Yeah, so you got quite a lot going on there, haven't you?
And I still can't believe it was... It's just one of them drinks that sent me a bit funny. It was only one can of it, and it's supposed to be 5.3%, but Karen dropped me off in Poulton afterwards, and I just found myself wandering around the car park, not knowing where I was going. And just this one can of it, you know, I'd forgot all my PIN numbers.
Sent you on a journey. Well, that's why it's called Martian Dynamo, you know.
There's just something in it that's connected with it's altered my DNA slightly, I think. This is what happened. I got home the next day.
I went back to the wrong house.
No, I went for a couple of pints afterwards, but then I got back with my backpack, shoved it under the stairs. I came down the next day with a headache. I looked in my bag, and immediately after being dropped off, after drinking this red IPA, being dropped off in Poulton, I'd gone into Home Bargains and bought 9 baking trays that were in my rucksack. Fucking 9 baking trays.
Yeah, that's a slight overorder, that is, there, isn't it? Are you collecting them for some sort of, you know, end-of-life apocalypse?
No idea. No idea whatsoever.
There you go. It's a selling point.
There was a flavour on it. I mean, God, it was so bitter in parts that there's this flavour, and I'm trying to, because, you know, neither of us know much about tasting, do we? You know, you just taste what you can taste. And I'm trying to think, what's this bitterness? And at first I thought, is it pine? Is it pine I can taste in it? I thought, you can't say that. You can't come on a podcast and say someone's beer tastes like fucking pine. So I'm thinking, what's it taste of? And right on the end, it's got this real kind of mouth-smacking bitterness that... Have you ever had Laphroaig whiskey?
No.
Peat whiskey? And it's that. It's that kind of peatiness right on the end.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then I came to make the notes a couple of days ago, and I chucked the can out, so I had to go back on the website, and I typed up my notes, and I thought, let's just have a look and see how they compare with the ones on the can. And I looked it up, and it fucking was pine.
Oh,
yeah.
orange
and pine notes. I thought, fucking hell. It's fine. It was very piney, lovely and piney. In
Martian Dynamo. But yeah, there's a lot going on with that. And it's you know, it's the first one I've seen that mixes up an IPA with sort of, you know, that red ale taste as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
interesting beer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I like red ales. Once you get like that IPA taste in your mouth, other flavours come smashing around.
But yeah, Atom, they're up in Hull. If you get yourself on the website, they are kind of sciencey and unusual, aren't they? But, you know, for single can drinks, I think, you know, they'd be great to try.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you use the code Reclining Pair when you do your order with Atom, they'll give you 10% off as well. So, happy days. Now then, Benjamin, I don't know about you, but I don't think there's anything better than sitting down in your favourite comfortable chair to enjoy a big steaming plate of sausages.
Yeah, of course.
Match made in heaven, isn't it? It's like having a pie in the car or a double-decker at the vet's. Some things just go, you know, sausage chair. But how much do any of us know about these things? Do we know enough? Eh? And you know what? Heaven forbid, if you're ever sitting there enjoying yourself with your sausage in your favourite chair and you find yourself under attack from heavy artillery.
Yeah.
Dangerous times. Would you know the appropriate protective headgear to reach for?
Right, yeah, I can see where you're going.
So in the interest of public information and enrichment, I would ask that everyone be upstanding as we play chair sausage helmet.
I'm just, after all those, the double deck at the vets, I can't stop thinking about whether it'd be suitable to have a pot noodle at an abattoir.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you 21 names, seven of each, so it's all even, and you've got to tell me if it's the name of a type of chair, a type of sausage, or a type of combat helmet. And then at the end, we'll tot up your scores, and we'll see how much immediate danger you're in,
so
if any.
It's sausage. What's the other one?
Chair, sausage, helmet.
Combat helmet.
Right, straight up. It might be quite quick, this. Okay. Number one. Longanzina.
A longanzina?
Yeah.
So that sounds German.
Mm-hmm.
And Germany's, you know, renowned for sausage. So I'm going to go for sausage on number one.
I'm going to give you that. It is a sausage. Argentina, yes. Though.
Oh, Argentina.
Argentina. You don't think of Argentina for sausages,
well,
do you? But
you think of steak, don't you, for Argentina?
Yeah, yeah. Lipman.
Number two.
Lipman.
Lipman. Lipman.
Lippmann.
Lipman. I'm going to go for... I'm going to go for combat helmet.
Oh, he's off to a flying start. Spanish combat helmet.
I knew it.
Montefortino. Number three. Montefortino.
It's got. I'm going to go for chair.
Ooh, it's a helmet. It's a Roman helmet.
Oh, God damn it.
Number four. Bowfinger.
Bowfinger?
Bowfinger.
Sausage. Surely.
Chair. German.
Oh, God damn it.
Number five. Servalat or Chervalat.
Chervalat.
Depending on how you...
I'm going sausage again.
You'd be right.
Yes.
Switzerland. Swiss sausage.
Brilliant.
Number six, Kegelhelm. Kegelhelm.
Combat helmet.
It is. It's a Greek combat helmet. Number seven, Cabanos.
Cabanos?
Cabanos.
I believe it's some sort of chair. It's a deck chair.
It's a sausage and it's Polish.
I should have known that.
This one might have listeners shouting at the I was going to say the radio then. Do people still... Do you listen to the podcast on the radio?
I listen to the radio.
I have no idea what we're doing. Number eight, Poang.
Gotta be a chair. Come on.
It is. IKEA.
Oh, brilliant.
Number nine, Falukov.
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 I'm going to go combat helmet. It sounds quite an angular word.
It might sound it, but it's actually a Swedish sausage.
Is it?
It's a Swedish sausage.
Did I tell you when I bought all that sausage for my dad at Christmas?
No, but please do.
Oh, we went to the German market, me and my mate Bulb, and I just got pissed. And I hadn't bought him a Christmas present as yet. And we were standing, the bar was next to a sausage, German sausage stall. You know, the giant sausages that are all about 2 feet yeah. long. And I just kept saying, when I was standing there, I'll have that one, that one, that one. And end up, the final bill was about 40 quid. And I was like, oh, fuck. But, you know, I just went for it anyway because I was pissed. So I wrapped them all up individually. I think there were about seven or eight sausages. And I gave them on Christmas Day. And I watched him just unwrap all these sausages in total bemusement. And I'd even wrapped a cucumber in the middle just to sort of,
just to throw him.
Just to throw him. Because he did like sausage, but...
it's a good job.
I think I went.
You didn't buy them for him, ironically.
But in May, I think he was still eating them in May, 5 months later.
Number 10, Pickelhaube.
Sausage.
German helmet.
God damn it.
Number 11 is a Maryland.
Chair.
It's a sausage and it's Australian.
Oh.
Number 12, Bardic.
I've lost my flow now, Bardic.
Ah.
I'm going to go for sausage.
Three.
Over half, I reckon,
four,
again.
Four, five, six, seven, eight, 9 out of 21.
Not only 9. I demand
that's your worst. Do you demand a recount?
Yeah.
Still 9. Uh, Right, what have we been watching this month?
It's the Great Pottery Throwdown. I think they're on to season 8, aren't they? And it's over.
Yeah, something like that. Seven or eight.
Channel 4 every Sunday night about 9 o'clock. Or is that just the final was a bit later?
Well, it starts at 7:45 usually on Sunday nights. But by the time we broadcast this, it'll have finished, so people be able to watch it on Morpho whenever they want if they haven't watched it already.
And
it started on BBC Two a few years ago, didn't it? They did two series on the BBC.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
Yeah, Sarah Cox used to present it, and then it moved to Channel 4. Melanie Sykes did one series, and then it's the woman from Thingy, isn't it? Derry Girls that presents it now.
It's the nun, isn't it, from Derry Girls? Yeah, the Irish nun.
Siobhan McSweeney. That's it.
That's it. And we've got the resident Judge Keith. Haven't we?
Yeah.
And who's the other what's the other judge's name? The tall man.
Oh, Rich. He started off just sort of being the kilnman. Or the drying room guy in the early seasons, yeah.
Well, Rose has took over that mantle now, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's got a great balance, isn't it? And obviously Keith, yeah. You know,
Keith Brimer Jones he's called, the Big Keith.
Big Keith.
You can tell he's been carting big lumps of clay around all his life, can't you? He's just fucking solid.
Yeah, well, he's a big solid man, but what makes it a bit different to other shows. He gets really emotionally involved, doesn't he, in some of the pieces they make.
Yeah, he cries about 6 times an episode.
And at the final sort of judging, when the contestants bring what they've made in that show up to him to be judged, if he really likes it, he gets genuinely teary and emotional.
Oh yeah,
it's
always genuine. I mean, it's nice that he cares that much, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, he can tell he's really invested in the people. And when he sees them, I think it's when he sees them make real progress and kind of grow in it that it gets to him a bit. Yeah, I always think that he's got some condition where he gets his emotions the wrong way around. So, you know, on the pottery throwdown, someone makes a absolutely fantastic pot that everyone should be kind of singing and dancing about, and is in floods of tears. And yet, at home, him and his family are stood in the garden burying the beloved family rabbit that's died recently, and he's laughing his fucking tits off.
Yeah, role reversal.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Rich as well gives it a nice balance, doesn't he? Because he's a very calm, positive man. You know, like it's put for Sunday evening TV, you know, like the Irish woman adds that bit of comedy. Keith's got the emotion.
Yeah.
And Rich has got
Emotion. And Keith's a bit of a punk rocker. He used to be in a punk band, apparently, Keith.
Yeah, because the theme music to it, it's like, I've not looked it up, but it sounds a bit like The Who or something like that.
Yeah, it's like something kind of 60s sounding. But
as far as the contestants go, I'd had a bit of a think about this, because, you know, they're into season 8 and they know what works and what doesn't work, don't they? So you do tend to get, like, you'll identify with this because you've watched quite a few seasons. You get like a profile of certain contestants, don't you?
Yeah.
So they'll always have a young, good looking girl on, don't they?
Yeah.
Guaranteed. And she always tends to do quite well, doesn't she? And get quite far.
Yeah.
Perhaps the guy that stayed in that shouldn't have. You always have a joker, a man called Bill or Dave, who's a bit of a character sort of thing.
There's always a Miriam who lives in a van.
Well, there's always a short, rotund woman who lives on her own, usually from Bristol. You know, that's the one who lives in a van, or on a barge.
Yeah.
There's always like a very tall surfer or a young lad that lives near the sea, doesn't he? And he always give his sort of sea story, and he's, you know, paints shells on it or something.
There's usually someone from the continent, often a German, a tall German or Belgian guy who doesn't get, you know, very far through it, but he's there to give it an international flavour.
A tall middle-class European, isn't it?
Yeah.
They tend to put on like some sort of emotional short-haired 55-year-old woman who's just lost a sister. That's come up a few times, you know.
Yep.
You know, he's obviously putting all emotional grief into her pottery.
There's usually someone who's an absolute fucking disaster as well.
Bit crap.
Yeah, a bit crap. But just before the end, one of the slightly better Potters accidentally drops theirs and thusly extends the stay of terrible Potter onto another week.
And there's always someone that's usually sort of quite, you know, you don't really notice, but then suddenly they'll have an absolute nightmare in, is it Raku, the firing outside in the wooden box?
Oh, yeah.
The Raku week or something, and there's blows apart like a fucking bomb or something.
Where it falls down sometimes is the same as with Bake Off, you know. You could basically do the same challenges, have them making exactly the same thing every year. And because you've got a different group of people who are differently creative, it would still be entertaining because you'd never get people doing exactly the same thing year after year. So, but they feel that like they have to give them new things to do. And sometimes they're just not very good things to do. You've watched three or four, haven't you?
Yeah. The new,
and
new
one
series.
Of them is just these like freestanding ornaments that you're supposed to put on a shelf or something and stand against the wall.
Oh, well, yeah, I saw that one. Yeah, yeah. They were called, like, Staffordshire wall mounts or something.
Yeah, Staffordshire wall standers or something. And you think, I'd rather see him doing a, you know, just give him a fucking tea set to do. Or yeah. Did you see week one with the woman who made the world's first gravy trawler?
No.
You had to do a dinner service for a roast dinner.
Yeah.
And this woman made the biggest fucking gravy boat that you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, I did. I know what you mean. I mean, it was like a ship, wasn't it?
It was like a...
like a galleon. The animal ones are always good.
Because, oh, the anything where they've got to make faces.
Yeah.
Faces because, of people or faces of animals.
Because you always get someone that's put some sort of boggling of the eyes. The cross-eyed nature. Well, that was interesting when me and Karen went on that quiz show on ITV the year before, and Jude looked on Twitter at all the comments of while we were on, and some of them were so funny because I struggled at the start. Like I got going in a bit and answered a few questions, but at the start I was just sort of bright lights and sort of froze. And people on Twitter were saying, like, Ben's there just to get a warm in the studio. And
then your brain started firing.
But some of the comments on Twitter, some of them were like, Karen doesn't trust Ben to lock the doors at night before she goes to sleep. And I thought, okay, she doesn't.
I don't trust Ben to lock the doors at night. You lock me in your shed.
Yeah, Twitter is good for stuff like that.
I think their pot was shit. Does anybody else think their pot was shit? Oh, there's thousands of them. I must know what I'm talking about. But it's good. I'll watch any of these kind of programmes where people are making stuff. Apart from, I had a go at it. I tried it, the sewing bee.
The sewing bee I thought was a bit more limited than other programmes. Like, I really liked one or two of the series. But then after a point, it's like, oh, they're trying to make a shell suit out of kite material again. You know, and it was just a bit sort of, oh, you know.
So, yeah, we'll be enjoying half a dozen very unusual beers next time, which we'll tell people all about.
Yeah, I can't even remember what I'd ordered, but, it was interesting.
It'll be good. That's half the fun of the fair.
Sound.
Right. Nice one, Ben. I'll speak to you shortly.
I'll catch you later. See you later.
Bye-bye.
See you later.